What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Former President Donald Trump faces 37 federal counts in connection with an investigation into his handling of classified documents at his Florida home, Mar-a-Lago.
What's most striking about this indictment is just how many different counts there are, and that there is also a conspiracy charge alleging that Trump worked alongside his military valet, Walt Nauta, to evade authorities as they were trying to retain this information.
Plus, pharmaceutical giants finalize a $19 billion opioid settlement. And after the recent debt ceiling crisis, Democrats push for an overhaul. It's Friday, June 9th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Former President Donald Trump has been charged with 37 counts, including willful retention of classified information, withholding a record, conspiracy, false statements, and obstruction. As we reported in this morning show, news of a federal grand jury's indictment of the former president, the first time that's ever happened in U.S. history, broke last night. And this afternoon, charges against Trump were unsealed. In brief summary, prosecutors allege that Trump hung on to sensitive military secrets that he knew he should not have retained access to, shared them with others, and directed his staff to help evade authorities' efforts to get them back. Special Counsel Jack Smith spoke about the charges this afternoon.
Adherence to the rule of law is a bedrock principle of the Department of Justice, and our nation's commitment to the rule of law sets an example for the world. We have one set of laws in this country, and they apply to everyone.
Trump's military valet, Walt Nauta, was also charged alongside the former president on five of the 37 counts. Nauta also faces a false statements charge separately. Here's Special Counsel Jack Smith again.
It's very important for me to note that the defendants in this case must be presumed innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt in a court of law.
And joining me now to discuss the latest developments and what happens next is Wall Street Journal Justice Department reporter Sadie Gurman. Sadie, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Sadie, we know the charges now. They are serious. In your reporting, did you find that people were surprised by the specific counts that were detailed in the indictment?
We've known since the August 8th search of Mar-a-Lago that investigators had been looking at violations of the Espionage Act, that's a law that pertains to the handling of classified information, as well as obstruction. We've known that this is something that's been the focus of investigators' probe for quite some time, but I think what's most striking about this indictment is just how many different counts there are, and that there is also a conspiracy charge alleging that Trump worked alongside his military valet, Walt Nauta, to evade authorities as they were trying to retain this information.
Is it unusual for the Justice Department to unseal an indictment like this? I know there was a lot of speculation last night as soon as we heard there was an indictment about what the charges would be. Was there a sense they were trying to get ahead of that leaking potentially?
Well, that's part of it, I think. But, usually when there is an indictment, prosecutors will wait till the first appearance to unseal that. Trump's first appearance is not until Tuesday, and he has already been out on his Truth Social platform talking, about the case. His lawyers have been all over national television throughout the night and early this morning, and we're really taking hold of the narrative. And so while political considerations are not supposed to be taken, you know, in any prosecution, the Justice Department wanted to present its case to the public as soon as possible and prevent the likelihood of false information or incomplete information from getting out ahead of Trump's appearance next week.
Let's talk some more about the other person charged here, Walt Nauta. That's Trump's military valet. What charges is he facing?
So he is facing charges that he conspired with the former president to obstruct investigators as they were trying to conduct their probe and trying to get these documents back. And he's also facing a count of lying to prosecutors and investigators during the probe. And mainly, he told them that he had never seen the boxes, that he didn't know much about them. But in reality, he, in fact, had moved the boxes of these documents around a storage room. And he had told investigators during one of his first conversations that he did that at Trump's direction, but later told them that he just didn't know anything about it. So prosecutors said this was false. That is a crime to lie to federal investigators as they're pursuing an investigation like this. So that is what he has been charged with.
Any statements or response from Walt Nauta?
No, we have not heard from his attorneys today, and we have not heard from him at this point. You know, the way that this information rolled out, I think people are just still trying to sort of wrap their heads around the around what's going on here with DOJ. So there's been no comment from Nauta and his team.
In this 49-page indictment, there's mention of an audio recording from back in 2021 where Trump is talking about these documents. Why is that significant?
That appears to be some of the strongest evidence prosecutors have at this point that we know of that indicates that Trump knew that the material he was holding on to, he should not have access to, and that it would be illegal to show it to other people. This was in July 2021, a recording that was taken at his golf club in New Jersey. He was with a writer and a publisher and two other staff members, and somebody tape recorded it. And he was talking basically about a secret, one of these documents that he had that discussed a secret attack plan on a country that isn't named but is identifiable as Iran. And he indicates that he knows that he shouldn't show this to people. And that is really the clearest evidence that we know of at this point that speaks to his state of mind.
Sadie, this case was first assigned to U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon, who Trump himself had appointed to the bench in 2020. What happens next here?
So Judge Cannon was somebody who ruled in favor of Trump during a prior court fight over whether some of the documents were privileged. She was got a lot of scrutiny because she was perceived as being very pro-Trump. She's a Trump appointee. And so conceivably, the Justice Department could file a motion to have her disqualified and replaced with a different judge. That has not happened yet. But that is something that could potentially take place. And it remains to be seen how that would be resolved.
Meanwhile, there has been speculation that Trump could face a friendlier trial in Florida. We knew there was a grand jury convened in Washington, D.C. What have you heard about that?
Well, most of the evidence has been heard over the past months by grand jurors in Washington, D.C., who Trump's team and other Republicans perceive as skewing heavily Democratic and being anti-Trump. And so the Justice Department, in part, wanted to avoid the possibility of another legal battle over venue and wanted to avoid arguments from Trump's team that he couldn't get a fair trial in Washington. But also, you know, there's the issue of where the crimes were committed. Most of these counts relate to actions that took place at Mar-a-Lago in the district and the Southern District of Florida, where the case is going to be held. So that is, it makes it a little bit more sense as to why they chose to bring the case there as opposed to Washington.
And speaking of Trump's legal team, there were some rearrangements there today. What do we make of that reshuffling?
Well, that's, you know, sort of typical from what we see from Trump as it relates to his many legal perils over the years. He has had a lot of lawyers working for him, and he frequently rotates them out. And the circumstances of the departure of these two isn't entirely clear. But now he is seeking lawyers who can pursue a case in Florida. So it's not surprising to see him make a shuffle like this, especially now.
As you mentioned, Trump has been posting on Truth Social. He first posted about this indictment last night. That's where a lot of us first found out about it. What is he saying today?
He has really leveraged these criminal charges as a fundraising effort. And in the, you know, very first moments after announcing that he'd been indicted, he was reaching out to supporters, urging them to make contributions and saying that he was being targeted and that this was a case of election interference by the Justice Department, the Biden administration. And so he is, in keeping with past practice, presenting this as another effort to undermine him and to target him unnecessarily and that he's done nothing wrong. And using it as a way of generating funds for his presidential campaign.
These are the first federal charges we've seen against former President Donald Trump, but there could be more in other cases that are underway, including in Georgia. Let's just recap what could be coming down the pike.
A local prosecutor in Atlanta has said she could potentially reveal charges in her investigation as early as this summer, and she has been examining efforts by Trump and his allies to overturn his 2020 election loss. So that's an entirely different thread, something that Jack Smith is also pursuing at the federal level. But that is one of a number of investigations aimed at Trump right now that will ensure that his legal troubles go on well into the 2024 campaign cycle.
Wall Street Journal Justice Department reporter Sadie Gurman, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, pharmaceutical companies finalize a $19 billion settlement with states that accuse them of fueling the opioid crisis. More after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Skies are clearing over much of the East Coast after several days of hazy and hazardous air due to smoke drifting south from Canadian wildfires. Meteorologists say winds are now pushing smoke off the coast and toward the south, where smog is expected to be less heavy. Much of the eastern half of the U.S. is forecast to have moderate air quality into the weekend. That's considered between good and unhealthy, according to the tracking site airnow.gov. Forecasters and health officials have recommended limiting time outdoors and wearing a mask for protection for those in affected areas, especially for seniors, children, and immunocompromised people. On Capitol Hill, Democratic lawmakers have introduced a bill to overhaul the way the debt ceiling works. The Debt Ceiling Reform Act would allow the Treasury Department to keep paying the country's bills unless Congress objects. The bill comes after Democrats voted last week to approve a deal struck between President Biden and Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy to suspend the debt ceiling until January 2025 in exchange for spending cuts. That agreement prevented an unprecedented default on America's debts with just days to spare. Pharmaceutical giants have completed a deal to pay $19 billion to U.S. states that accuse them of fueling the opioid crisis. The legal fight stretches back nearly a decade, when more than 3,000 lawsuits from states, Native American tribes, and counties alleged the drug makers, pharmacies, and distributors played down the risk of painkillers and didn't stem their flow. Wall Street Journal National Legal Affairs reporter Erin Mulvaney has more on the companies involved in the settlement.
So most states have agreed to settle with the manufacturers Teva and Allergan, as well as the pharmacy chain CVS and Walgreens. Basically, a lot of the industry was accused of pushing and marketing these drugs that could really become super addictive and lead to overdose deaths, and not stemming the flow to the communities was the main accusation for pharmacies. And a lot of the distributors and manufacturers were accused of marketing and selling these things without, and the dangers weren't exactly apparent. That was kind of the root of the lawsuits. So CVS and Walgreens will be required under this settlement to monitor, report, and share data about suspicious activity related to opioid prescriptions, and Allergan and Teva will be required to put systems in place to prevent drug misuse.
The latest settlement closes lawsuits against most of the major players and brings states' total income from opioid litigation to about $50 billion. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has filed a lawsuit arguing that the U.S. government's drug price negotiation program is unconstitutional. The pharmaceutical giant Merck filed a similar lawsuit on Tuesday. Both lawsuits allege that the program doesn't allow much room for negotiation and that it effectively forces drug makers to accept whatever price Medicare officials set. Prices for prescription drugs have soared in recent years. Medicare is the country's biggest buyer of prescription drugs and pays for many treatments that cost more than $100,000 a year. The Department of Health and Human Services didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. And finally, management at the insurance company Farmers Group told employees last year that most of them would be remote workers. After the announcement, many employees made some big life changes. They sold their cars, began homeschooling their kids, and even moved their families to new cities. But the company's new CEO reversed that decision last month and is now requiring 60% of employees to be in the office 3 days a week starting in September. He said it would be great for, quote, collaboration, creativity, and innovation. But workers are revolting. Some are preparing to quit. others want to unionize. But our reporter Peter Grant, who has been covering the return to office, says that overall, threats to leave aren't bothering CEOs.
At Farmers and at all the companies where CEOs are calling workers back to the office, I think they're anticipating that, yes, they're going to lose some people, and they're ready to do that. Some CEOs, not at Farmers, but at other companies, they've even said in their announcements of new hybrid workplace strategies that, yes, we know some of you are going to leave. And they try to get out in front of it in that sense. So when employees respond negatively and say, we're going to leave, they are not happy with it, but they're also ready to live with that because it's very important to them to bring workers back.
The new CEO says that he's heard the complaints and that the company will be continuing with the transition. And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Luke Vargas. Keith Collins filled in for Luke this morning. The show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé and Mohsen Ali, with help from Anthony Bansi, Kate Bullivant, Julie Chang, Jayla Everett, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen. And editorial support from Alan Haberchak, Sandra Kilhoff, Michael Kosmides, Catherine Millsop, Valana Patterson, and Chris Sinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.